Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. You know that this is our second show for the Black History Month, and that the show last week dealt with a theme of origins. This show deals with the theme of origins. The next show will deal with the theme of origins, and the last show will deal with the theme of origins. I like going back and trying to learn everything that I can, and going back to as close as the first word was written, spoken about the subject or the issue, and then coming forward to present day. I learn better that way. That has always been my approach. And so, in deciding what we were going to do for Black History Month this year, I decided that I would go the origin route. It also is related to some of the work that I'm doing now, in that each of the topics for the next this show and the next two shows after and the first show are part of a larger set of two projects that I'm working on. And so it was natural for me to want to go back or have to go back to the origins in order to be able to do what I'm doing. Today's show, we're going to talk about the origins of African-American studies and how it came about, when, where, and as for me, always the most important, the why it came about. I will say up front, in case you don't already know, that today's show is very personal to me. I was an undergraduate, then a graduate, then a professor during the 60s, early 70s, when the Black Studies movement got started, grew into a movement that eventually resulted in Black Studies becoming an academic discipline, and all of the struggle and resistance, violence, death, injuries, and et cetera, that was part of that struggle. And so I won't say today's show is hard for me, but I will say 45 minutes ago, I had to shut down. I couldn't deal with anymore. So, yes, it is kind of emotional. Not kind of, there's a hell of a lot of emotion here. But we'll see what I can do to help you understand this occurrence and its importance. And I will say this also, teachers and parents, but particular teachers, listen to what I'm going to say today. And in doing so, see if you could relate some of the things that I'm going to talk about to the present situation, and that present situation being the war on public education and your involvement. I mean, you're there. You are present. You are either in the resistance or standing on the sidelines, or you're actively supporting the other side. you're there, you're in the war. Like some of the, I won't talk about individuals per se, but like some of the events that I'll talk about, they pertain to where we are today. And one last comment before I get started. Remember the road trips. And the subject of the road trip was the war on public education, the people's story. You guys told me a lot about what it was like being warred upon. The theme of the project then was every war has casualties. The war on public education is no exception. That seems really kind of plays over, or premise sort of like plays over into where we are today. And I want you to see if you hear something that you can relate to as being similarly situated as the students who were waging the struggle to bring about black studies on university and college campuses. Okay, let me get started. Black studies. First of all, I don't know how many of you were on campus that had black studies or African-American studies programs or departments, institutes, research centers, etc., on your campus when you were going to school. The departments and the institutes and research centers and programs came about somewhere around 1968, 69, 70, 71, 72. And maybe you were not in school on campuses when this was all going on, but maybe you went to a school that had one of these programs that was the birthplace that had its beginning back in the mid and late 60s, early 70s. So, what is Black Studies? Since, if you don't know, first of all, Black Studies, African-American Studies, as it is in present form, is an academic discipline. Just like sociology is an academic discipline, psychology is an academic discipline, history, political science, chemistry, math, and et cetera. They are all academic disciplines, and these disciplines are what you find on college and university campuses in forms of departments. And what makes them a discipline is that theoretically and practically, a discipline is a specialized area of study or focus. It has as its main structure a theoretical base and a methodological base, and it's those two bases that makes it a science or not make it a science. It's also considered a branch of study and knowledge, and hence, in order to be a discipline, a recognized discipline, an accredited discipline, on a college or university campus, you must have a clearly perceived specialized area of knowledge or focus. You must have a theoretical foundation, and usually said theoretical foundations will have 1, 2, 3, 4 or more different theoretical perspectives. Like in sociology, we have the Marxist theoretical perspective. We have the symbolic interaction. We have the conflict. We have the structural functional perspective. And all of these perspectives, and I'm calling perspectives, they're not called perspective within the discipline. all of these theoretical frameworks have individuals who were founders of the perspective, who contributed to the growth and establishment of the perspective within the discipline, and usually dating back over 100, 150 years or more. Black studies is, as a discipline, is a newcomer, dating back to, I said, the late, middle to late 1960s and into the 70s. As a discipline, whether or not, and I'm using two terms, Black studies and African American studies, which I will clarify in a moment. But Black studies, it's saying, it defines itself as a critical and systematic study of the thought, practice of African American people in the current and historical context. And defining ourselves, because I was part of that establishment of African American studies, we had to prove that we had a theoretical base, a methodological base. We had a branch of study and knowledge. We had a focus. We had a coherent structure in order to, quote, have a shot at becoming an accepted discipline. It was not easy. There were tons and tons of professors, administrators, college, university presidents, board of regents, governance, what have you, who did not want Black studies to be recognized as an academic discipline, because if you are, you can get departmental status. The departmental or department is the core unit of the structure of university or academia. If you have a department, an independent department, you have the ability to grant tenure or recommend to the university administration tenure. You have the ability, the authority to grant degrees, bachelor's degrees, master's degree, PhDs. And on the one hand, it is the foundation structure of the university is the academic department. You can say it has some power because of the things that I just mentioned. It also gets support from the administration in terms of providing funds for full-time employment and half-time employment, and also paying office staff, bringing on teaching research assistants, and all of the things that you need to have a functioning quality department or program. Black studies didn't have that, and there were so many people who didn't want it to ever have it. And hence, this was what is referred to as the struggle. Some people date the struggle the mid-60s. Others will date the beginning of the struggle going back to almost the beginning of ancient societies, with the argument being that Egypt, Mali, Sungay were African cultures that had the equivalent to modern-day academic studies, in that they had intellectual, traditional study of themselves and the world which they live in. And I mentioned something about that last week, in that there were African civilizations that had universities that trained scholars over the cumulative knowledge that had been put together so that they could then carry forth this knowledge and add to it. And so you have those groups that want to go there. Then you have a group that I just mentioned will say the origins was the 1960s and thereafter. I sort of fall in between those two groups in that I truly recognize the origins of specialized knowledge and studying of oneself and practicing the art of using knowledge to better oneself and one's civilization and humanity. I buy into that. But I take the position that the origins of African-American studies, and let me back just a little bit. When I say African-American studies, when I say black studies, I'm talking about specifically the United States. I'm talking about the United States from 1619 that we talked about last week to today. Black studies or African American studies has, I won't say morphed, because some people started from this perspective. They say that African American studies encompass Africa back hundreds of years ago. It encompassed Africans who were put into slavery, put on slave ships, and spread across the Atlantic to the Caribbean, to South America, and eventually to North America. And wherever you find Africans, you have the tentacles of African-American studies, because the discipline is dedicated to the African and his or her experience wherever they are located and however they got to where they are located. I don't go that far in terms of my professional approach. I understand it, but all of my studies have been basically on the African and the African-American experience here in the United States. So, given that, I look at what started happening as early as, I said, 1619, and I talked about it a little bit last week in terms of Africans, when they came here, they brought knowledge and skills and et cetera that was so valuable to the colony that it really helped the colony survive and grow, and that there were individual Africans, especially the males, who had knowledge and skills that they could read, they could write, they could speak maybe French or Italian, because they were Catholics. And one in particular, I said, was so literate that he was hired to be a lawyer for a woman to protect her estate that she received when her husband died. So that the issue of education, the issue of the African and his or her experience, and then later the African-American here, I say really starts then, that period, back in the early 1600s, and then going forward. There is a book called The Education of the Negro Prior to 1861 that covers that period from 1619 up to 1861. And it's by Carter G. Woodson. Carter G. Woodson is considered the father of black history. Not black studies, but black history. He wrote extensively, researched extensively, and the book that I just mentioned was published in 1919. He wrote another book called The Miseducation of the Negro. It was published in 1933. He probably published, I think, more than a dozen books. He's the founder of Black History Month and one of the early African-American study scholars. I take that route. Also, you've heard me mention a guy by the name of W.E.B. Du Bois. Eminent scholar, worldwide renowned scholar in his day. So much so that he's considered one of the founders of sociology, one of the seven scholars that textbooks now will identify as founding fathers and men and women of sociology. He literally helped the field of African American studies get started back in the late 1800s when he did some of the first field research on African American experience, and his work challenging someone else we've talked about on this show, Booker T. Washington, and his approach to African American education after the Civil War. I'll say a little bit more about that later. It was people like the two gentlemen that I just mentioned and others that I think really laid the foundation for what we now call African-American study. That was the origins for me. And I'll tell you why towards the end of the show. And so, now, coming back to present-day African-American studies and its origin question, and going with the mid-1960s, what we have is during the 1940s, when the NAACP was fighting the separate but equal doctrine that was handed down in the late 1800s, saying that separate but equal was constitutional, and the NAACP 25-year legal fight to overturn that precedent. And when they did overturn it, leading to the 1954 decision that declared separate but equal unconstitutional, and the courts mandated the integration of at least public education from kindergarten to PhD. You know from whatever history you studied or were exposed to that there was a tremendous counter movement, social movement, to forestall, delay the compliance with integrating the public schools. you know about the, we talked about George Wallace and his stance and what he did. You know about the riots, the police assault on black students who tried to enter for the first time white schools, elementary, middle schools, and colleges, universities. Many of the people who went through that, it was their experience. And Black Studies is studying the experience of the African American. An experience being your lived experience, what you live through day by day basis, weekly, monthly, year, major events that happen to help shape your experience. A lot of people look at that period because it was when black people came out in force, in numbers, across the country and engaged in a struggle to get the promise of freedom that has never been extended to the African American. And in the notion of freedom, education, the right to the opportunity for an education and a quality education. So you had then the adults, but you also had thousands, if not tens of thousands, students, black students, white students, engaging in that civil rights movement. Sometime during the mid-60s, 66, 65, 66, 67, black students took the movement from the streets and brought it on to the campuses. First in the South, and then eventually all across the country. They looked at the university, the colleges, as being part of the establishment, the overall social structure and its arrangement to keep black people and others in a subservient position and to continue to support, maintain, and spread white dominance politically, economically, socially, culturally, you name it. And so they looked at the university as something's wrong here. If we're out here trying to get equality, our civil rights, we should be on the campuses doing the same thing. And hence, that movement, that shift of focus from the streets, the courts, and et cetera, moved on to the university campuses. That was the beginning of what not a lot of people refer to as the black student movement that would lead to development of an academic discipline. During this time on college campuses, there were some other things that were happening that people argue that they led to eventually the black campus movement, the black campus struggle becoming a movement. I know some of you probably will recognize that on college campuses, the free speech movement, particularly at Berkeley, California, in Berkeley, California, at the University of California at Berkeley, the anti-war or anti-Vietnam War was taking place. The Black Power movement followed and came on campus as an extension of the Civil Rights Movement. But it was the Black student movement that became the movement of movements. Yes, these other movements added some momentum to the students' motivation for starting the movement and continuing it. But it was the fact that it was the Black students who came on campuses, start demanding, and started to take the actions that they did that I'll describe in a few minutes, that really, really took off. I don't know any other way of saying it. Parenthetically, also, the Black student movement on campus gave rise to the women's movement on campus, the ecology movement on campus, and other ethnic groups movements on campus. The Hispanic or Latino movement, in what part of the country you are, the Asian movement, Native American movement, all were, I'm going to say, inspired maybe by the Black movement on campus and started their own movement. Also, these groups, the gay rights movement was also, and as I mentioned, women, and then the development of women's studies, all were, I won't say inspired, some of the people will get mad, yes, but they were inspired by the Black student movement on campus. And so you have, by the mid-60s and into the late 60s, the beginning of this thing called Black Studies. Black Studies is different from Black History. Black History comes out of both the history discipline. Black History traditionally is a chronology of the human experience. When I say chronology, not necessarily day by day or week by week, but maybe decades or many decades apart, they will characterize what this decade was all about. But it's basically a chronological, descriptive presentation of human history, a given time, a given location. Black Studies, on the other hand, as I mentioned earlier, was born as a attempt to create a discipline that would be perceived and accepted as a discipline that would then lead to the creation of a department with all of its autonomy, independence, and resources, and that this department, its focus would be twofold. One, it would be an academic focus, that is, doing what all academics do, doing research, writing papers, writing books, going to conferences, trying to advance the knowledge of the discipline. Like, what was it that Einstein said? If I see farther, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants. And we are all in academia. Our job is to add to the body of knowledge, scientific knowledge of our discipline. And so that was the thrust of the Black Studies movement, there was a second thrust that's unlike other academic departments. And that second was what some call a social responsibility. Others may call an activism. The black students were demanding, and let me back up a little bit. They were demanding several things, and one of them is what I just mentioned. But what they were demanding, and this gets into what I always say to you guys, of the who, what, when, where, how, etc., it's the why. It's the why for me that makes all the others make sense. What the Black Studies movement was largely about, they were, as I mentioned before, they were looking at the inequality that existed in the larger society, and then they looked at the university and said that the university primary function was to reproduce in the form of knowledge, policy, etc., what was the characteristic of a larger society. To keep minorities in their place at the expense of advancing the white dominant group, what people now refer to as white privilege. And they were looking at this and they were saying, they do this in terms of their goal, their objective, both overt and covertly stated agenda, is through the Eurocentric model of the university, its purpose, its function, its definition of knowledge, its approach to the discovery of knowledge through its methodologies, and etc. That this was unacceptable. If we are going to have real freedom, we need the colleges and university to change and to foster unbiased, unprejudiced knowledge and the imparting said to all students, not just black students, but all students. It was basically a counter to what the university was and had been for 150 years or more in this country, and more than that in Europe. So, there was a lot of demands, I'll put them in the form of demands, manifestos that black students put forth to the administration, but I think I can boil them down to one, they wanted more black students on campus. When I was in school, I took many courses where I was the only black person in the class. And I mentioned before, I went through 10 years of college, university training. I had one black professor, and he was a part-time or adjunct professor. I did have a chairman of the sociology department at Wayne State University, which I never took a course from him, and he would not chair my dissertation and also be my mentor per se, because he didn't want some professors targeting me because they didn't like him. So they also wanted more black professors. They wanted a change of the curriculum. And this is what I want teachers to hear haven't heard anything else. They want to change the curriculum. They wanted a curriculum that would help prepare black students to become more aware, knowledgeable of black history, black culture, black contributions to American society. They wanted courses that would enable black students to, in many cases, feel better about themselves and the history of their group. They wanted courses that recognize and appreciated the black existence in this country. And they wanted black professors to teach those classes, getting away from the Eurocentric model that I just mentioned a few moments ago. They wanted from black studies itself. I'll go back to where I stopped just a moment ago. They wanted black studies to be a two-tradition approach to the study, the scientific study of the black experience. They called it, or it's been referred to as, the activist intellectual tradition. The intellectual was, you know, your professors would be highly trained, skilled academics. The activist was that these same professors would help prepare students and themselves to take their knowledge and their skills outside of the university, the ivy-covered walls, and use that knowledge and those skills to help enable the black community. When I say community, I'm not talking about just in a given location, but the black community in general, to better understand, appreciate itself, but also to be able to develop practices in the form of businesses, politics, what have you, that would improve the community itself and humanity. But first, the community itself and humanity. So they wanted something that was anathema to what was going on the traditional university and college campus. You know from, at least you might know from your experience as a student on college campus, professors came to the campus, they did their research, they did their teaching, they met with each other. They didn't share with the local community. It was a rare thing for a professor to go out in the community, be it a white community, black community, brown community, doesn't matter, and actually share his or her knowledge, expertise, and trying to help the community better understand and deal with something, to bring about social change, to take on a law, take on a practice, discriminatory practice. We didn't do that, and we were not really encouraged to do that. Personal instance was when I was invited to join the faculty in the sociology department at UCLA, the chairman of the department specifically told me, you are here on our invitation. We're using our full-time equivalent. That's the money that they have for a given professorship. You do not have any obligations, responsibility to get active in the black student movement here on campus or off campus. I was told that. And basically what he was saying was that you will get tenure based upon the research that you do, the publications that you get published in, the better or the best sociological journals, the amount of money you bring in to support your research and thus support the department, how you contribute to our knowledge base, the standing on the shoulders of giants thing, and our reputation in academia in terms of the sociology department, not your involvement with the black student organizations, and at that particular time, the Center for African American Research. That was them saying that was a no-no. That was totally contrary to what the black student movement was pushing for, and what they got in most instances was professors who were willing to work with them on campus and then go out in the community. Major, major, major point here, folks, major. Teachers, where are we in terms of the war on public education? Do we have teachers who go out in the community and work with community organizations that are trying to organize and fight in the war? Do we have teachers, K through 12, becoming members of organizations outside of school? And if you know of and you participate in this outside the classroom, outside the school campus activism, how many local professors can you count that have been there to aid the group in the fight? This, to me, is monumental. Because I think teachers should be activists. I think, and I've said this for 3 years, you know this, I think teachers have made major mistake in relying on the leadership of their unions, national, state, local, to deal with the issues that we are now facing in terms of our survival. We did not, as teachers, do what W.E. Du Bois said that we should do back in the late 1800s, and I'm going to try and get to that statement in 1 minute. But think about it. When you were in school, any of your teachers, professors, were involved in activism outside of the campus, even if they were involved in activism on campus, and your fellow teachers, like here in Buffalo, I know many teachers now who are members of organization, community organization, that are fighting the battle to save public education, independent of their union, independent of what union leadership says we should and should not do in terms of resisting. That's something that, as I mentioned earlier, we could learn and take the lesson from. Also, the black students, when I said that, I say the black student movement, even though it wasn't a formal movement, has its roots back in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s. Recall last year, probably the year before, I've talked about the what happened when the Civil War was over, that Reconstruction period, and when the federal government set up the Bureau to try and provide educational opportunities for the newly emancipated slaves. And I talked about the philanthropic entrance into that, Rockefeller, Carnegie, and I always forget one or the other, but so, oh, Ford, Henry Ford. And I also talked about the founding of Hampton Institute and Booker T. Washington and the type of education they wanted and they were willing to fund. And I then talked about comparing that period to our current period when you have the Gates, the Waltons, the Broads, the Koch brothers, and now the DeVos philanthropic efforts to shape public education. We are in the same situation today. It was W. Du Bois who took on Booker T. Washington, and I wish I had more time. Booker T. Washington was an accommodationist. In other words, he was a black man who kowtowed to white supremacist power, influence, and etc. He became the president of Hampton Institute, and he got money from the philanthropic community. He got all kinds of things. In the late 1800s, he entered into an agreement that became known as the Atlanta Compromise. And in that compromise, him speaking for the national black community, he basically said to the white people that in exchange for you giving blacks education, putting up the money for it, I will, as leader, I will get black people to, how should I say this, give in to what you want in exchange. Some of the things that they wanted was blacks across the country would give up their right to vote. I'm saying this because it makes me sick. Blacks across the country would not retaliate against white people who inflict violence individually, collectively on it, black people. Black people would support efforts to roll back the amendments that were added to the Constitution to protect black people. I mean, this is sickening to me, folks, but anyway. And in exchange for that, he would deliver, as I said, the black community. And, oh, then they said, oh, the education that we say we will give you, one, it will not be, it would be the grades and little college, but your education would be vocational education, not a liberal, classic liberal arts education. You will be trained along with your subservience to be able to serve the needs of industry and white privilege. You will not have humanities courses, art, music, social studies courses. Does this sound familiar to today? Through the austerity program, all these kind of programs were cut because they wanted kids to be trained. My time has just run out, and I am nowhere close to finishing this. I'm going to be in trouble, but let me say this. The black student movement on campus came at a very heavy price. You've seen the footage from the beatings by police, by troops, and et cetera. But we know of 13 young black men from age 15 to 21 who were killed in direct relationship to the struggle to bring black studies to fruition. And I'll say this. I said this was emotional because I was involved. I came within 90 seconds of being the 14th name on that list. I came within another incident 60 feet from being the 15th name on that list. The struggle was real. The struggle continues. The struggle that we're going through now in public education is, to me, right out of that struggle. Folks, I have to stop. Thank you. See you next week.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.